I know this is supposed to be an informal talk, but since I have to write, there's some formula I need to write down with a 30 or 20 index. So I kind of torture myself to prepare some notes, and so it can just dispute. And so it's kind, you know, I just finished writing a book which have 10 chapters. The chapter 10 is about the string net, but it do not include the more recent stuff. So this kind of like you can view the supplementary chapter of my book. No, it's not published yet. I hope they can publish it by the end of this year. And so let me start from the beginning, some background. You know, this incandescent matter theory, traditionally, there's a two kind of dominating theme. One is band theory and, you know, Fermi liquid theory. You know, another is signature breaking and, you know, Ginzburg-Landau theory and RRG and et cetera. And so we kind of believe that all the phase transition, all the phase are described by the signature breaking. And so we know that the phase is simply a phase transition determined by the singularity in the free energy. So this is a phase diagram of a water. No, this is a gas. And there is no way to go from ice to water or gas without encountering a singularity. So certainly from very early on, there's an issue about why ice are different from water and gas. The gas and water are the same because we can go around in continuously go into each other. And so it's really a very deep insight that to realize that the difference of this phase are really because the ice and the water have different symmetry. So the symmetry kind of play a key role in understanding the phase and the phase transition. And it's not at all obvious that why the singularity in the free energy has related to symmetry breaking. You know, it's really not obvious. And however, from the very beginning, actually, we have a counterexample of that. The singularity in the free energy do not necessarily connect to symmetry breaking. And the first two evidence is kind of overlooked. It's the third evidence which caught our attention, which is the fractional quantum Hall states. The fractional quantum Hall states have a really, it's really kind of a new phase because they all have the same symmetry and have a different, they correspond to different state. They have very different property, but they all have the same symmetry. So therefore, there's no way to use a symmetry to understand the fractional quantum Hall states. So that's kind of a counterexample of this Landau symmetry breaking paradigm. And so maybe this suggests that maybe quantum Hall states have a new kind of order, which I call the topological order. And certainly the question is really the following. So what? You know, you have a counterexample, so what? And the point is that the
What were the first two that
were
overlooked?
It's superconductor and the Fermi liquid. And probably because that's so simple, your system. And the point is that you know the Landau symmetry break understanding is really a comprehensive understanding of the order, phase transition, effect theory, have all kinds of things, really very comprehensive. And if there is a counterexample of a symmetry breaking phase, then the issue is that whether there is a comprehensive understanding of a new kind of order. So that's really the issue. And so to really understand what is a what are issues, then we like to just let's just give a list of the classification order. So here we just only consider the bosons. The fermion is kind of illegal. And so there's one big class of order which we call the symmetry breaking order. Well, you'll see we do exist. And so the definition is the definition simply is that the ground state has less symmetry. Okay, another big class of order, which is essentially non-symmetry breaking order, which may call this a topological or quantum order. So certainly there's a bigger problem. So what is the definition of a topological and a quantum order? Well, a kind of a rough definition would be it's like a pattern of a quantum entanglement. That's right.
Now I really
understand. And the point is this is really the point that we use something we don't understand to define something we don't understand. And but it does have one point is that it's a face, there's something there. It's not nothing there. There's a something there we try to describe. So we'll come down, we'll see.
There's
something there. The issue is, I'll make this more refined. But really, there's something there we try to describe, but at the moment we don't know what it is, and we don't know how to describe it. And so that's a problem. Actually, that's why we are working on this. And example for this would be simple superfluid or magnets. And for this one would be like a free fermion. So I will explain what's a and a superconductor or quantum Hall states. So why free fermion correspond to have some order which cannot be characterized by symmetry? Well, it's pretty simple. You know, this is essentially the Griffiths, what did I say? Oh, Lipschitz, Lipschitz transition. You know, we could have a fermion surface, we have a free fermion system with this fermion surface, and another free fermion system with this fermion surface. We can tune the chemical potential, the hopping matrix element of electron, to have a transition between these two states. And there is a critical point. And the ground state energy have a singularity when the two Fermi surfaces touch. So this is a critical point. And these side transitions do not involve any change of symmetry. So there's a big, and so this one is kind of too simple. So but we understand this, and all the different order in the free fermion will be classified by different topology of Fermi surface. You know, any topological change in Fermi surface will give a phase transition. Yes.
Yeah, just a very basic question. So you said that fermions don't come under this order. And then you say bosons, and now you listen
to bosons. Very good. Yes. Yeah, so we'll see later. That's the fermion, free fermion can emerge from purely bosonic system. So this does belong to the phase transition of purely bosonic system as a quasi particle, as collective excitation. And so even though we only boson allowed, but the fermion do exist in the system.
Why are fermions not allowed? What's wrong with fermions?
Well, for the sake of definitiveness, I try to say all the order discussed here are supposed to be order of purely bosonic system. So that's my.
But But I mean, is that for, you know, technical simplicity, or is it the
The point is following. This is a really long story. In my mind, the fermion is non-local object. So I only consider local theory. The reason fermion is non-local because there's no way to create one fermion alone. So that's a simple way to say that. And you will see the fermion is non-local. And so to mix the order of a local system and a non-local system, a little bit confusing. So here, when I say bosonic system, I really say the purely local system, which means the total Hilbert space of the system is a direct product of a local Hilbert space on each lattice site. So when I say boson system, really, that's my starting point. The theory is such a theory. And the fermion theory do not belong to that.
So some people view fermion operators as non-local because they don't commute well-separated.
Exactly. That's also another way to say that.
What is operators that actually commute.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because non-local, if you think about the order in the local system, a non-local system will be quite different. Actually, fermion, free fermion system is really non-local in a sense. Yeah. And so that's why. Although we have fermion here, but these are really order of a boson system. Okay. And So then the another issue is, what is the mechanism? You know, the mechanism, when I say mechanism, I really say how to get those order. Well, in this symmetry breaking order, the mechanism essentially is a particle condensation. Now, clearly, the superfluid is a particle condensation. But actually, all the symmetry breaking transition can be viewed as some kind of generalized particle condensation. There's some kind of a composite object whose condensation gives you other parameter, and other parameter characterizes symmetry breaking transition. And so this picture is very important. That is, all the Landau theory about the symmetry breaking and the phase transition, all of that is actually a theory of some kind of generalized particle condensation.
Why superconductivity is off on the other side instead of
superfluidity? When I say superconductivity, I really means the charged particle which coupled to dynamical gauge field.
So it's the charge that's
wrong. Not charged, it's dynamical gauge field. When you have a dynamical gauge field, the whole thing are different. The other parameter isn't even not gauge invariant. So there's no other parameter in superconductor.
But
a
neutral superfluidity
for another
side.
There's a superfluid means no gauge field. There's no gauge field. Yeah. And so with this understanding that the Landau theory, a symmetry breaking theory, is actually a theory of particle condensation, so one can naturally think a generalization of that would be condensation of some extended object. So it turns out that the string condensation can be thought as a mechanism to generating this new type of order. So if you have a state with a string condensed, obviously, which cannot be described by particle condensation, so the Landau theory doesn't work, so it's something new.
You just mean non-local order parameter?
No. Wilson loop, yes.
I mean both. Just because something has an expectation value, if there are no strings around.
I know there's a.
There's nothing.
Okay, when I say string, the string here is never fundamental, so they are all boson system.
By having an expectation value on the ground state doesn't necessarily mean it's something.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. There's you're really already going to. I don't know whether I can ever get there or not. The string condensation have a two meaning. One meaning is the meaning like a particle condensation. Let's say, what is a particle condensation? Particle condensation means we have a wave function of bosons whose amplitude do not depend on the position of boson. So that's a one way to understand the string condensation, that you can have a wave function of strings. But the amplitude is all the same regardless the shape, size, and how many strings you have. So that's one way to describe string condensation. Another more abstract way to define string condensation is to define some kind of loop operator whose expectation value is non-zero. And the second definition is it's very tricky. It may not always lead to the non-trivial phase. But on the other hand, its second definition is more general. And so here I mainly use the first definition. So we actually have a string in the ground states and to see what we can get. So that's why I'm using this mechanism. So here we make string condense. So that it's kind of from construction point of view, we can get this in your place.
Well, and in many cases, you can do duality to map something from this side to that side.
No, this can only be done in the 1 plus 2 dimension. The string is due to particle in 1 plus 2 only.
2 plus 1. Oh.
2 plus 1 plus. I don't know which one is which.
1 plus 2 is
but in the...
One time. Maybe that's the problem.
Yeah, but I actually, in my paper, sometimes it's 3 plus, sometimes 1 plus 3. I really don't know which one is which. And in a three spatial dimension, in three spatial dimensions, string is due to string, so there's no way out. And in the fourth spatial dimension, string due to membrane. So in the three spatial dimension, the membrane condensation, actually, you could also have membrane condensation. But in condensed matter, this probably not as interesting, because membrane condensation in three dimensions always due to particles. So they probably, as the dual theory, probably belong to this. But the string in three spatial dimension really just a string. There's no the dual theory is also a string. Okay, so there's a mathematical foundation. You can see we really the thing we bring out is very comprehensive. So our understanding of the topological order, quantum order, really can really follow the pattern for our understanding of symmetry breaking. For the mathematics foundation for this theory, group theory. And this is a big question mark. And at the moment, we see there's some kind of general. So in this talk, right, probably with the tensor category theory, or projective symmetry group, and maybe there are other things, we don't know what is really this mathematical framework behind this.
Projective
symmetry group, yeah. And so this is another direction, so I won't be able to really talk anything about this. And I will just make a few remarks. And I have a lecture notes I gave in the graduate student retreat in MIT, and I put that on the web. So if you're interested about this, you can go to my homepage. It's http. No, the OUP, the Oxford Press, Oxford University Press is my publisher, and they do not allow me. And I actually signed very bad contract, which essentially say any paper I published which may affect the sale of the book will be illegal. So I kind of in big trouble. only afterwards I realized there are some items there. So I couldn't read any review article about this topic.
Officially.
I don't know. So I'm careful to sign anything. Those contracts from book publishers just amazing. And so today I will talk about this. And the real interesting is about the collecting mode. We know that the collecting mode in a symmetry breaking phase is spin wave, phonons, all these are scalar bosons, actually. But for this topological quantum order, or more generally for the string condensed phase, it turns out to be gauge boson. And the fermions. So that's why I say the fermion is illegal here. It's actually appear here. It's just as a collecting mode. And the gauge boson, you know, the scalar, what is scalar boson? Scalar boson just fluctuation order parameters.
Could you say solid
time
instead of collecting mode?
Yeah, in that sense. Yeah, so yeah, here the collecting mode will be more general, including solid time.
In particular, fermions should probably be solid.
Yeah, fermions. So gauge boson is just an ordinary fluctuation of a condensed amplitude. These wave functions have amplitude. The fluctuation amplitude give you the gauge boson, and the end of a string give you a fermion. So when you have an open string, have an end. One end of a string is a fermion, not just a whole, just one end is a fermion. And so because this collect mode is this, so the effective theory, you know, the effective theory would be, for this would be Kingsmill-London theory. And of course we really, you know, and so here, what is the effective theory for this new orders? And it turns out to be, you know, because of this, so it's not surprising to see that the effective theory will be the topological quantum field theory and the gauge theory, for example. If more specifically, it turns out it could be the QED plus QCD. So this was done. And what is not done is a chiral fermion is not done. So we couldn't construct a 1-2-3 standard model because we don't know how to do chiral fermion. And also no graviton. But according to Snorley, maybe it's related because you know, this stuff is very similar to this spin form or loop quantum gravity things, you know. So at least the mathematics structure is very close to that. Okay. And we know that this the symmetry breaking, the concept of symmetry breaking and the group is very useful in determining the gapless excitations, because the gapless excitation is protected by the symmetry. So certainly, you know, this is at this stage it looks pretty abstract, you know, and one may say what's useful for this. Actually, this kind of concrete description of this kind of order have a similar effect, that is also protect gapless excitations. So of course here they protect gapless gate excitation, the gapless fermions. And so but this is really a topic here, so I probably won't talk about it here. So now let's just go into some details. So now let's just concentrate on the description of the mainly description of a string condensation, and to see how it's related to the tensor category theory, you know. So let's just do some concrete. But those are kind of the issue we hope we can address. Okay, so certainly the first question is what is a string net? Okay. The string net is very simple. A string is really in general I call it a string net. It's simply a net of flip the spins. What? So let me explain what is this. So essentially, what we have is a lattice system. You know, I have a much picture in the notes, and much better picture notes. It's very hard for me to draw. So essentially, we try to draw this. We try to consider some kind of Hessian lattice. And the spin is kind of on the links.
So you you started in a particular, I mean, you were very general here.
Yeah.
Now you're going to
very this particular
spin, fix spins on lattice.
Fixing on the lattice. Very. There's interaction between neighboring spins and things like that. So this is very concrete. Now it's very concrete. Yeah.
No charge motion.
No charge motion. Fixed spin, just spin. Yeah. But spin don't have to spin 1/2. Spin don't have to be spin 1/2. Can be any spin.
Some kind of magnet.
Yeah, some magnets. Yeah. But we really don't need to. We don't use this rotation symmetry. So essentially, what I try to say is that say the spin really means that. On each side, we may have several states, state 0, 1, 2, and so on. We're using I to label the state on each side. So then we just say the state 0 means no string. Then the state 1, no string means no string on this link. The state 1 really means a string, a type. A type 1 string on this link.
So again, it's important to put the spins on the link. So what
if they're not? Well, it's just, you know, for any lattice, you can view the lattice point as a link of something.
Okay.
Yeah. Here, using the Kagame lattice because the link only have it's always trivalent, so that simplifies things. Yeah, so here's a spin on the Kagame lattice.
Okay.
The spins on the Kagame lattice. So that this link only have a three, we only have a triple join, no other join. That makes things simpler, but don't have to be that. But and so you can see that, so if a state I will be the type I string. You know, so that is a, so that's it. That's a string net model. So the point is that the string net model really just another name for spin model, really nothing more than that. Yeah.
Yeah, just make sure. So does I have an upper bound?
Finite, yes, the upper bound. So the spin model. So there's a there's a some from 0 to n. So the I.
Can I choose
from other way?
Is n the size of the spin?
Yeah, n is some finite number. N just some numbers. You know, for spin 1/2, n will be equal to 1. For spin 1, n will be 2. You know, it's really nothing. Just a rename all we already know. It's just relabeling. But however, so this is the Hilbert space. But I think the non-trivial thing is really in this Hamiltonian. So the Hamiltonian contains three terms. And the first term is really, it's make this model really like a net, because this term is a constraint. So U is very large. So that means the no ends. So any spin configuration can be, you know, it corresponds to some kind of a string net, you know.
Where each of these lines has a label.
Yeah, each line has a label, exactly. I, J, K, you know. Each line has a label.
So if you let those labels include 0, then all.
Yeah, the label includes, label includes 0.
Don't have the whole thing?
No, here, I know. But here I only draw the one which don't have, it's non-zero one. When I draw, I only draw the, but you imply that, but 0 one is implied, you know, fill everywhere. But when I draw this, the solid line usually means non-zero one. If I have to be 0, it means you can erase it. Yeah, that's a no.
So with this trivalent graph, you mean that only an odd number can be 0?
No, it don't have to be. No, here is this only constraint that there's no n. So therefore this is so this point is not allowed. So this is like a string n here is not allowed. But however, this point may be allowed. So there's some branching rule. So this also enforces some branching rule.
The option is if you just have a you have a line going along which doesn't at least another line.
You're,
you're
writing this Hamiltonian in this new basis on string X. Right.
Actually this is also in a spin. Also in a spin basis.
It's not obvious, it's a local.
It is local. Essentially, you can say no and. No and means that if, no and really means, means if, okay, here, we consider, we examine, look at the three spins. If two of them are zero, one of them is non-zero, that's called big energy. That's it. And then we can also design this to allow certain branchings. That's if this IJK belong to some class, we say that's allowed. That's called no energy. For other IJK, it's called huge energy. Certainly, you may say, why we do this?
Zero.
You know,
one of them is zero. You insist that the other two are equal. Is that correct?
That's right. Completely right.
Along the lines.
Oh,
the
I see.
The index stays the same.
It stays the same. That's a, that, but that's a, that, yeah, that's correct. Certainly, you say, why I do this? The reason I do this, I didn't mention. The reason I do this is that this Hamiltonian turns out to be what we hope to be is a universal Hamiltonian, which can capture hopefully all kind of a topological order here. That is so. That's why why we do this.
What are the other terms?
Okay, this term is a string tension. And this term is a string hopping.
So that's a one-link term.
Yeah, this term just say zero means cause no energy, but some other IJK cause some energy. Usually this term is small. We usually set this into zero. But this is a hopping, means a string of this loop can change the shape. Okay. So inside this is like a constraint term. It says, so that make this the low lying state have some kind of a string-like structure, and these two are dynamical terms. So if a string tension dominate, then the ground state contain almost no strings.
The Hopping term you require more than just three strings.
Yes, and the Hopping term is so actually since you asked, the Hopping term typically the most general Hopping term require 12 spin interaction in this case. But I would say only 12. The reason is that only 12 because with a 12 spin interaction, you can describe all possible topological order in two dimensions. So that's quite amazing. So mainly the 12 means that you have a six spin on the edge of a hexagon. So essentially, you're just flipping this spin, so that you add a loop of a string here. And then the amplitude of added loop depend on the spins on the sixth leg of the hexagon. So but those spins don't change, but their value depend on what amplitude you have.
But you can get a Hopping term with no dependence on
those
six.
That's right.
You need the dependence on six to get all the topological.
Exactly. Without that, you can get Z2 gauge theory, but you do not get the Trin-Simon theory. Actually, if you add this dependence, you get a Trin-Simon theory.
That's what's a fundamental Hopping interaction? Hopping event?
The Hopping event is you have a term like it's a product, for example, the product of sigma plus. The sigma plus, like for spin 1/2, like a flipping spin.
Yeah.
The product sigma plus on this sixth side. So when you apply this term, all the spin are flipped. So effectively, you kind of add a small loop.
Simultaneously,
exactly. So it's not a particle hopping. It's a string hopping. You just add a piece of string, another piece of string, just add them. But I think the really interesting thing is that with this six more spins, you can get a lot. That's So this is in some sense, that's a general Hamiltonian.
So the conditional hopping, is that dependent on those six spins around the
The only condition is this one. This set of conditions. All other hoppings allowed.
So any hopping allowed, which is just simply the
Yeah, as long as consistent branching rule.
This can be a huge constraint.
This can be a huge constraint, exactly.
Depends on the model.
Exactly.
Sometimes that forbids almost any
yeah. So the real idea is that this is kind of like a universal Hamiltonian, and at least in two dimension, in higher dimension, maybe similar. But so this kind of universal Hamiltonian, which at least can describe all the string condensed states, and all the string condensed states actually include I think all the gauge theory and all the double the Chern-Simon theory, and also with the fermions, and including both this. And okay.
So we have 2+1, 3+1 doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. This also works in 3-pi. In 3-pi, certainly you don't have a Chern-Simon theory, but you do have a gauge theory. You have lattice gauge theory. You have a twisted lattice gauge theory such that end of string are fermions. You know the standard lattice gauge theory end of string are bosons, but in this model, by including this actual term here, you can get a twisted lattice gauge theory. In that case, the end of string will automatically become fermions. So that's how we get the QED, QCD in the 3 dimension.
Which lattice uses 3
dimension? You know, for this approach is some kind of, let me see. I don't know, lattice with a only trivalence. You can always design lattice that way, so that's so all the vertex have a 3 links joined to it.
Sure.
Yeah.
We had a talk by Michael Friedman.
Yes.
Ago. It's related stuff.
Yeah, it's very related. And in a Friedman's talk, you'll see this relation. I think he considered the closed string. And so I don't know how far the closed string can go. It at least can generate a Z2 theory and a double Chern-Simon theory of SU2 type. I think SU2 double Chern-Simon theory. I don't know whether one can get more than that. They don't have branching.
Single loop.
Yeah. So if you only have a single loop, you can get all the doubled SU2 Chern-Simon theory. And at least if you include the loops, you can get all the gauge theory and all the doubled Chern-Simon theory and the twisted gauge theory and also you can do the 3 dimension. So you know it's but I don't know whether there is some generalized description of closed loop alone can cover this or not. That I don't know.
You can get all of those with n, let's say, equal to 1.
No. Yeah.
You need arbitrary n.
N need to depends. Okay. To get the gauge, n actually is a number of the representation, number of irreducible representation gauge group. For discrete gauge group, they are finite. So that's fine.
For
continuous gauge group, n should be infinite. But that's another shuttle. That, you know, for very large n, there's natural energy cutoff. So energy cutoff. You know, you never get a particle with a charge like 10,000. And you could effectively have this continuous. You don't have. Okay, the approximation for. Yeah, the approximation here is here. What I try to construct actually is a fixed point Hamiltonian. You can see we want to study topological order,
right.
And the way we study topological order here is that to construct fixed point Hamiltonian. For topological theory like a discrete gauge theory, we can indeed construct a fixed point Hamiltonian in lattice like that. But for fixed point Hamiltonian, it's a lattice theory which just don't scale under RG in a naive sense. but I will explain better later. But it's you know, but
this one
scale, but later I will describe how to choose this H and a T term.
So if you say H
goes
to 0,
H goes to 0, actually I choose the T term properly. If you choose this T term properly, this Hamiltonian just don't scale.
So it's conformally.
Yeah, but it's the opposite of a fixed point. It's sort of zero correlation.
Yeah, zero correlation. Yeah, exactly.
Vertex is independent of every other, every term.
Yeah.
commutes with every other.
Exactly.
Zero
correlation length.
So it's as far as it, well, so it's you know, a fixed point or still scale invariant.
Yeah. But however, for the QED, QC with continuum gauge group, such a fixed point Hamiltonian is a little bit ill-defined, but can be viewed as a limit. So that's why this to get a fixed point Hamiltonian, n get to infinity, you get some thickness.
A
but
limit on where you have to go to scales, but much larger than the lattice space.
Yeah.
Where you recover that.
Yeah.
Continuous
gauge. So the So if you want to rigorous, you know, don't consider the continuum group. How continuum group emerges is there's additional more physical things which is less rigorous. And so the now the question is how to construct the fixed point Hamiltonian. How to construct the fixed point Hamiltonian to describe this topology order. Okay. And okay, so now this those kind of general. So now it's a little bit now we can go to something more concrete and detail. Okay, and so the idea is that we don't consider Hamiltonian at all. We consider the ground state wave function. So we start with the ground state wave function for the string condensed states. Then we hope from the ground state wave function to obtain the Hamiltonian. So that is a logic. And certainly, if you want to obtain the fixed point Hamiltonian, then ground state wave function will be like a fixed point wave function. So the question, what is a fixed point wave function? Which is by definition, the fixed point wave function is just a ground state of fixed point Hamiltonian. That's the definition, but doesn't mean anything. But the real input is that we assume the fixed point wave function is topological. You know, at least it should be scale invariant because as a fixed point wave function at the long distance, they look the same. So in general, we can only say the fixed point wave function should be scale invariant. So here's additional input that it is a topological. So topological means that.
Sorry, just before you start, I just wanted to come back to one thing.
Okay.
What kind of things can you describe it that Friedman cannot? I mean, you have this branching possibility.
Yes.
Can you describe things that he?
Yeah.
Which were they again? You probably said it.
Oh, okay. I think this formulation can describe all the Friedman's theory.
Yeah.
I don't know whether closed loop can describe all this or not.
Could you have examples of things that where it cannot?
And the simple example would be the S3 gauge theory, the gauge theory of S3 group, which is which is probably not SU2 type. So, you know, what they can describe is a SU2 level K transaminant theory with a K change from all kind of value. But
taking non-abelian versions of Kataev's model, that can you get all stuff like that? That's
okay, yes.
I mean.
Yeah. So very good point. So this is a kind of a string net theory, okay? And so let's do this. So suppose this is a string net. And this loop will be here. And the lattice gauge theory will be here. Of a discrete group. Yeah. To be definite. Lattice gauge theory of all the discrete group. And this loop includes this double the transaminant theory. Double the transaminant theory of SU2, which I know, but I don't know whether it's another thing. But there's many other double the transaminant theory. With other gauge group, and then
the loop that contains Z2 lattice gauge, but only that is it what you're saying?
No, not even lattice gauge. It's a Z2 double the transaminant theory. That's a loop.
Well, you seem to be assuming that in Friedman's description, the loops must never cross, or join.
Branch.
Yeah.
Or join or cross. Yeah. But that's, yeah, not, that's not really true. I mean,
yeah,
you certainly allow them to cross. And in fact, you can map the, yeah, description onto a description like this, because you just say if I is the number of loops going along, yeah, a particular link.
Yeah.
Then, you know, you can allow them to go onto a link. You have two on a link. You call that,
yes,
I equals two.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it's not really such a huge description.
It's not. You know, that's true. So this
everything can be represented in terms of one,
yeah,
loop.
Exactly.
But
so
not quite as descriptive as you.
I completely agree with you. You could have something like this. You know this effectively as another, mm-hmm, stream. And so what I research, I don't know. But on the other hand, I try to say is that there is a one of SU2 level 3 theory here, which described by Friedman using this loop, which are described by the string net using some branch of the string net. And so I don't know. So this is really, what I really say, I don't know how general loops theory is. And but I think there's a mathematician show that this net seems it's quite general. And so they also include the three-dimensional lattice gauge theory with fermions and et cetera. So that is I don't know. It's a chiral fermion.
Well, how about fractional quantum Boltzmann state?
Fractional quantum Boltzmann state, no. Yeah, we don't have fractional quantum. We don't know how to get fractional quantum Boltzmann state, yes. It's a chiral. So we can have double the fractional quantum Boltzmann states. But the non-doubled version, we don't know how to do it. So the topological wave function is a, I want to mention, this is really the work I did with Michael Levine, he's really the driving force behind all this. So if there's some question I couldn't answer, he will be here in a few weeks.
You're saying that the wave function, the ground state wave function, should be topological.
Yes, so here let me describe what I mean by topological. Means that suppose you have a wave function like this, you can change its shape. This should be equal. That's what I mean by topological. So if you don't change the branching, you just change the shape of the wave function. We assume the amplitude do not change. There's no good reason. And the things that we want to write down something which is scale environment. But scale environment really don't buy us much. And here we just do it. Make it a topological. At least that's guaranteed scale environments.
How can you have scale invariance when you have a lattice space? This is an example of a scale invariant wave function.
With lattice, you can draw this on the lattice.
Yeah, but this is much more than scale.
It's more than scale invariance, that's right. But this is at least this is an example of scale invariance. Yeah. That's true. But the
some kind of diffeomorphism.
Yeah. You really ask something really very.
Everything only depends on,
yeah,
diffeomorphism and invariance.
Yeah. And so maybe I can say that. If you have a theory with a gap, whether that means something topological, those theory, right, let's try to describe, all have finite energy gap, all the finite correlation. So I think physically, I think that is a source of a topologicalness. Because when a theory have energy gap, then at a long distance, at certain beyond certain scale, there's just nothing there. So that's why we say it's topological. So, and also that's why when you have a theory with a gapless gauge field, will be tricky. This really should be only be viewed as a limit of this topological theory. But to describe them directly will be tricky. Yeah. And so I think this is a kind of a fundamental assumption. But once you assume this, then it became a mathematical problem. Now, how many wave function can write down which have this property? Okay. And let me just list a few relation which turned out to be important.
Is there any sense where all that's important, sort of all the properties, is that this is true for large loops or
what this is a oh yeah. If for the generic theory, we hope this is true for large loop only. Yeah. So that in that sense that's not yeah. Then for the fixed point Hamiltonian, then the ground state wave function would have this condition for any size of a loop. Yeah. So that is why I say the fixed point wave function and the fixed point Hamiltonian is really in this sense. And in more general case, we think this is true for large loop, but it's very hard to specify.
I'm not quite sure what that means.
Yeah. Yeah. But for this fixed point Hamiltonian, then it became very definite. Yeah.
And even what you mean, I mean, it's a wave function on all loops. What does it mean that it's true for large?
On large scales, the loops look very dense, also.
Yeah. And actually, this is a very important. That's why those phase probably hard to find, because when you have a dense loop, they may form some kind of a crystal phase. So the Hamiltonian has to be designed very nicely. So the hopping is important. You don't have a crystal phase.
So this is just supposedly true of the ground state.
Yeah, I'm only describing ground state wave function.
You wouldn't expect it
exactly. No, exactly don't have this property, yeah. So the idea is that we want to describe the ground state wave function, then try to see how to characterize this string condensed. So those are supposed to be string condensed wave function. We want to find the data which characterize this wave function. Then we'll use the same data to construct Hamiltonian. You can see the trouble is that we cannot start if we don't have any data to describe it. You know, we need to have a collection of data to describe this wave function. Then we can using that data to describe.
It would be a very special system that has this property.
Yeah, but exactly. But if there's a gap, this seems you can get all kind of things.
I mean, if you find one, you're in good shape. You can move
yeah.
around in the phase. But
yeah, exactly. But there's a systematic way to constructing those. Yeah, you only need a 12 spin.
You have a concrete example.
Huh? Yeah, I will give an example. I don't know whether you want to see the example now or you want me to go along this line a little bit.
Concrete example
will
help you to focus on abstract.
I mean, this is
okay.
At least
a preview of a concrete. Okay. Yeah. This is the emergence. There is a symmetry that's being broken, or that's being restored. I mean, the way.
Yeah.
You have a discrete diffeomorphism symmetry at some point. In a continuum.
Yeah, that's true.
Topological.
Yeah, it's diffeomorphism. Yes.
Arise from
important. Exactly. Exactly.
And, in some state, such a state you're describing is one where that's unbroken.
That's right.
Unlike the world we live in, where it's manifestly broken by living in Gaussian space.
Yeah.
Right. We don't want to build this symmetry into your models.
Well, but the argument of universality somehow is that symmetry is being restored.
Yes.
Just in the ground state. Where was it to begin with? It's being restored.
Yeah.
But that's the question.
Exactly.
Yeah, what to begin? So actually, that's why I emphasize the Boson model. That's the Boson model is a starting point of everything.
Yeah. What I haven't heard is any symmetry argument for that.
There's no symmetry argument. Actually, I tried to de-emphasize symmetry entirely.
Yeah, but there is some local symmetry behind it. In the continuum, then there must be some way of formulating.
Yeah,
that.
Maybe you can formulate that way. Yeah, that's just a.
Isn't it just analogous to saying in some systems, to the Hamiltonian is translation invariant, but all the states are not. And here, the states say are well more than translation invariant. The ground state has special properties under the global symmetry group.
No, it's really tough. In the general theory of relativity, there's a symmetry. And And you can try to imagine a state, right, where that's a weapon. Take the universe very early. State world. I mean, you know, we're the only. Everything is topological. We've never seen such a thing.
No, in that language, the novelty is right. You can construct models that have this bizarre property.
But you might think that there would be better arguments for it from the structure.
Yeah. Since Duncan asked for the example, let me just give an example. And so the example is U sum over I product of a sigma z k plus minus g. Sum over P, B tilde P plus Hermitian conjugate. Maybe put a 1/2 here. So this is not much, but actually the thing that the B is given by this omega times 1 minus sigma z I over 2. Then the product of sigma xj. So those are on the edge. And those are on the leg.
Could you explain that equation? The second equation.
Yeah, maybe let me finish this example first. Since Duncan asked me to give an example. So let me explain. It's a B operator. This B operator is an operator associated with each plaquette. And the first product has a phase factor. This omega can be 1 or I. And then this sigma z is this I, sigma z, live on the legs of the plaquette, so live on the 6 legs. So that's a phase factor associated with the 6 legs. Okay, then the second term is the ordinary term, like this is spin 1/2 model. So it's like an ordinary Z2 gate theory, just add a loop here. Okay, so this is and then the first term, U term, is just is closed string condition, which you only have a closed string in this model. This first term is just enforced. This model only has a closed string, no branching.
So the phase factor is just so that you don't add a loop when there are legs. You can't pull it out if there are legs poking into it.
No, you can't put, but you have a face. This is a magnitude always equal to 1, just a face. It's just some face. The funny thing is that if omega equal to 1, this is just ordinary Z2 gauge theory. If omega equal to I, this is a U1 cross U1 Chern-Simon theory. So that's a concrete example for that.
B tilde P and
BP? And actually, if omega equal to I or 1, this B is a Hermitian, so we don't need that. But I write this way, if omega is equal to some other complex value, then this B is not Hermitian.
But the tilde from that B doesn't mean anything different.
Oh, yeah, actually.
Yeah,
that's I don't know. So that's why I write this way, I'm thinking there's a phase diagram that. When you change omega from 1 to I, there's a phase transition from Z2 gauge theory to U1 cross U1 Chern-Simon theory. But how that phase transition would be, so that's a big question. You know.
Omega has to be a fractional root of the
omega. What fractional?
Omega is any phase? Irrational, irrational?
No, in this case, this Hamiltonian is exhaustible only when omega equal to 1 and I. For other omega, it's not exhaustible, so we don't know what to say. But at least these two phases are quite different. You can imagine the phase transition. So essentially, those are one example of the construction obtained from something more general I'm going to describe.
Solvable when omega equals 1, meaning Z2 gauge theory and the Kagamil are on this layer.
Yes, exactly.
It's without a magnetic field.
Without magnetic field. There's nothing here. Just
no B squared.
Yeah, there's no energy. Just a ground state, all the excitations have the same energy.
But it's exactly soluble for the ground state. state.
And also for the excited states. All the energy, it's very, very simple. For every Z2 flux, they don't hop.
Everything
no dynamics, yeah, no dynamics. The Z2 flux don't hop, and each one just costs fixed energy.
No E square term.
Yeah, no E square term, exactly. No string tension. If you add a string tension, then things become tricky. Because the fixed point theory means string tension go to zero.
Yeah, so E square
Yeah. So this is one example. And for this one, really means this one. This should equal to zero. You know, of course, that's from this constraint, you know. But here, what I try to, not here because I'm describing the wave function, so I kind of decoupled from the Hamiltonian. So here I say, if this k not equal to zero, then we say the wave function with this one should be equal to zero. And this is the this condition turns out to be important for constructing the this topological wave function.
Sorry, you changed the picture. It used to have a loop there.
Yeah, I will add the loop. But this is simpler to understand.
Okay.
That we just say if you have a single end, amplitude equal to zero. So this is a ground state, so that's not allowed in the ground state.
So that was already ruled out because of here.
Yeah, but here I'm trying to describing wave function independent of Hamiltonian.
Oh, I see.
So I have to put this condition back by hand.
No string end.
Yeah, no string end. I put in by hand now. Okay. And then with the loop, it's also zero because at a long distance, you know, the string with the loop and just single string is a long distance looks the same. So that's also equal to zero. Because the topological environment, they can always shrink that to small.
But that doesn't have to be. It just has to be non-IPI. I mean, why wouldn't that be anything there?
Yeah, anything would be. But this will be enough. So for my construction, this condition will be enough for me later to construct the whole wave function, which include those things. But this is enough. We don't need a more condition. Yeah. Yeah. But other condition will be derived. I will derive other this property. Yeah. And of course another thing like Nick Reed just mentioned that this also equal to zero. If I not equal to j, yes.
The string cannot change.
Cannot switch, yeah. But this is more like a physics condition. If a string can switch, probably the real string just superposition of these two things, which just relabeling. Kind of. So this probably not really important. And the real important condition is this one. So it's hard to write those things. So probably you can I J M K L N and okay. So this is a I J K L M I J K L N. This cross means some other string configuration, which do not change in these two graphs.
Is LK so different? I don't know.
Those IJK LM are arbitrary. All arbitrary.
Well, how is this one different than the second picture on the left column?
This one?
Yeah. If you just.
No, here I assume this can be connected.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
They're not only connected by one.
Yeah. Yeah, because this shape, yeah, this shape, you know, yeah, just a local change.
The local change.
Yeah.
Still,
it's not one. Yeah. Yeah, this part because it's then my equation will be okay, too much space on paper if I draw this line.
Hmm. The way you drew it before is very much.
Yeah, I know, and maybe I should actually connect them probably.
You should definitely.
Okay. It's maybe I should. Wow, that means another few days of drawing. And so this is for people who work in conformal theory, this is a fusion rule. inside this is just fusion rule. And I think in the lattice gate theory, those structures are pretty common, you know. So here is just we have some local change of the string, and we get connection.
So this is just recoupling coefficient.
Recoupling coefficient, yeah. I don't know what they call it. It's a fusion rule, recoupling coefficient, rebranching rule, whatever. And what is amazing is that that's it. You know, if you give this a 6-year symbol, and with this a few supplementary condition, the whole wave function are determined by those local rules.
So is there a conditional equilibrium?
Yes. Yeah. But let me that side. So therefore, on one hand, a topological string length wave function looks something really inaccessible because we don't know what it is. Now with this description, we know what is that. It's f. For every f, you get a topological string wave function. So therefore, we have a concrete description of the topological wave function. And then we anticipate that we can use the same f to construct this fixed-point Hamiltonian. Yeah, so that's the next topic. So, but what the question here? Certainly, it's a highly non-trivial. I don't know how to prove why this would be enough. But I imagine this. I don't know. I never really think very hard.
I mean, if proof things, you know, the same F comes up in what they do, and they've
I
proven
see.
Things. Obviously, we can ask them when you come.
Yeah, maybe you can.
They've certainly proved rigorously some results. You know, describing. You know why?
Yeah.
Well, I know what your punchline is going to be, but you know why these conditions you're going to impose on F
yes.
give you a topological theory, and vice versa.
Yeah.
You know why
yeah.
topological field theory requires such an F to be. But
There's several things. I don't know whether I think the real issue is that whether if you only use loops, do you can get the most general F or not?
Right. No.
But however, in an abstract description of topological field theory. One do get a
right.
most general F,
that's what I mean.
But that's a different,
yeah.
that's a classification of topological field theory. In that line, these are really give you the same F.
Yeah.
So actually, that's really the mathematics involved, because there's a lot of mathematics involved to say how to describe a general topological field theory. It turns out that this F play a central role there. So all the topological field theory seems can be described by different Fs. And the F also play a big role here. So that actually, this is really the mathematical foundation why we believe, you know, this description describes all kind of topological theory. That's really.
This is also true for this doesn't depend on the number of spatial dimensions.
This can be done in any dimension actually, but in higher dimension, you need to add another rule called the crossing rule, which I'm not going to talk about now. You need to add this. The idea is that for any three-dimensional string graph, you can project in 2D, but you have this. So you need to supplement another, it's called omega. So in there, for 3D and higher dimension, you need F and omega. And this one, should you will map this one into this one. So that's how omega is defined. Omega is this coefficient. So then this way you convert all the graph with crossing into this graph, then this one will be handled by F.
So all the information is in two dimensions?
All the information will be in the omega and F.
The state can be represented in a plane.
In a plane, yes.
Is that the result proven for topological theories?
I don't know. Yeah, this is a construction point, so it's not classification point of view.
Okay.
So I don't know whether in three-dimensional topological theory, you always have this problem.
Yeah,
I don't know.
That would be spectacular if you could reduce any
I don't know.
Topological
yeah. Yeah. But this is the one way to construct a three-dimensional string theory. But whether that is the most general one, we don't know. But since this way, you get all the gauge theory and a twisted gauge theory. That's what we know. But whether there is other topological theory, we don't know. OK. So the next thing is so now knowing that we can use f to describe a topological wave function, then the next question will be, there's a, as a superior test, said f have conditions, and the condition, if I have a note, it'd be the equation 11.6.7. That's an equation with a certain index, so I don't want to write down here. And I'm not sure the index in the right place, because we have several versions of that equation with different convention, and we really kind of... 11.6.7, I think.
11.4.5.
Yeah, there's a one before that, that's right. But that one is a more complete one. Yeah. So the equation roughly have this structure. The first equation is have this structure. There's a 6 index here, 6 index here, 6 index here, plus 6 index here, and another 6 index here. But actually, it's not that bad. There's only 8 free index, so the total represents n plus 1 to the 8th number of equation. Yeah, so let me describe. Because this is not really mean anything. Yeah. So so what do you mean, Stalin? Why F needs to the self-consistent condition? Because you can see this relation just connect amplitude of a different string net. And when you have two different string net very far apart, you can using several moves to connect one to another and relate their amplitude. But the path is not unique. You can have several paths. So exactly, associativity. So you have to make sure that different paths give you same linear relation. Those are all the linear relations. They're all linear relations, and you should get same linear relation. So this is called the Pendragon identity. It's reduced from this. Again, there is a better graph in the notes. So I don't want to draw the index. So all they all have index. So from here, we can go to here.
Is this identical to the one that comes up in control field theory? Identical,
yeah, that's right.
Okay.
It's exactly. Okay. It's really identical. There's a...
So what context of the mathematicians discuss this?
Category theory.
Category theory. So those are really tensor category theory.
What? Groups, algebras, anything you like?
Yeah. Those are real tensor category theory. You know what I'm really describing here is that it's very well known. I don't know how well known, but it's known to mathematicians. For some mathematicians, it's very well known. Yeah, and Seberg and Mao make a huge contribution here. That's using this to study rational conformal field theory. Yeah, and actually that's how we get there. It's just really from Seberg Mao's paper to get this structure and. So this one is really, you know, from here to here we did this one. You can see we kind of move this leg here, move this leg here. So that's how this rule works. So if you move this leg here, you move this leg here, you'll go to here. So that's one move. And so I just move this leg here, move this leg here, we get it here. So here, that's give us a 1F here. And then the next, we can do this. We can move this leg, I think, we move this leg here, we move this leg here, then we get F times F, because then we get this graph. And yeah, we get this graph. Yeah. And then there's another graph. I don't want to draw it. Yeah. There's another way to let me just to. Well, I think I might draw it wrong in my notes.
What do the arrows mean on the links?
You mean this? I move this leg to here. Move this leg to here. Yeah, those all the three are oriented. Here, for simplification, I ignore the orientation. So all the three are oriented. And in the nose, there's an I star means orientation. So the star in all different places, that's... So this is a simple version of the way in the nose. Yeah.
So there's a subset of models that are not oriented?
Yeah, Z2 gauge theory, and amazingly, this U1 cross U1 chain summon theory is not oriented. This model is not oriented.
One doesn't have complex representations, right? I mean, that's U2, you know,
yeah, I don't know.
U and U1.
Yeah, this is not oriented. Yeah, this example is not oriented.
And ends in N bars, right? So you need to put arrows.
So for SU2, F is the six J symbols. And the six J symbols are bad identity like this.
Huh?
The six J symbols are bad
identity. Yeah, yeah. So I think that's a thing, you know.
I think it might be called the Biedenhahn symbol or something.
I see. So usually it's very hard to find this equation. You can see there's a, so what I do, I just put this in the Mathematica, and most of the equation are non-independent, and a few of them are independent, and take those a few, then you can solve this.
But there's a proof that there's an output
that, you know, you can solve it, probably. I don't know, no. So what I try to say is that the six-year symbol of the group theory of group always satisfy this equation. So that's why the whole thing connects to group. You can see the way I set things up, there's no group there. We only have a panic identity. But then, so everything comes out from the solution of panic identity. So each solution of panic identity gave us condensed states, and which in turn gave us a Hamiltonian. And then
I and J is then
labeled. Exactly. The I and J label representations, irreducible representations. And the branching rule is correspond to if the three representation cross product have an identity, then that means this is allowed to branch. So if using this, you can obtain the, you can, that's one way to obtain solution of panic identity in a systematic way. And this is a belief that the corresponding string condensed states would be this gauge theory of that gauge group. And then clearly you can see that if you modify this constraint or modify the Hamiltonian, we may get a different string condensed state with different six-year symbol, then you have different group. So there could be a phase transition with changing gauge group, you know, all this.
There's no theorem that any solution of these is coming from a group, though, is there? There are going to be solutions for F and any other consistency conditions that don't come from group representation.
Did you just say that if you take the weights here, if you take the HU, that's the weights in HU to be just group?
Yeah, HU essentially is a branching rule, so they enforce.
That was the branching rule.
Yeah, actually, yeah, very, very good point.
In
okay.
Case, it's exactly a
yeah. Exactly, lattice gauge theory. Yeah, exactly. The lattice gauge theory would give this. And so.
Well, he might have thrown some extra bounds in the Hamiltonian. Basically, the pin and average of the gauge theory.
So again, I'm writing something which is kind of meaningless.
These are requirements or particular solutions?
Yeah.
Are these requirements or particular solutions?
They are requirements.
Requirements, okay.
Yeah. So actually, this panic identity is not enough. We need two small supplementary conditions. Yeah.
What? These are sort of
D, no, D, yeah, D is dimension group which is equal to F I I I I 0, 0. Inverse. The definition D is this one, but in a solution D happen to be the dimension of a irreducible representation. Yeah, and so if you only have this the polynomial, you know what we're hoping for is that we want to solve the polynomial identity, just find a solution, then just carry on. Then the things that so if you only have this, it's not enough.
Are not group theoretic
about it? Yeah, there are. the double transaminant theory is not group, it's quantum group. And but there's a but this I don't know. I think there's something like I don't know. This is a quantum group, probably is everything. It's probably it's all solution for this. But
no, that was one of Wong's claims.
Yeah, but I really don't know. But I don't know whether the mathematical community have the full classification or not. But yeah, I really don't know. But since the quantum group is give you another class, but whether solution, what I really try to say is that this is not enough.
Group ones probably don't work in more than 2+1 dimensions.
Yeah, this yeah that's true. And so the. So what I try to say is that if you only have a panic identity, it turns out it's not enough. That the panic identity do not have enough independent solution to fix all the component of F. For one thing, it have no input of a branching rule. You can see there is no branching rule here. But however, we need a two supplementary condition. And this supplementary condition contain branching rule. This delta ijk is a branching rule. If equal to 1 means this ijk is allowed to branch, it's 0 is not allowed to branch. And then this is a kind of tetrahedral symmetry. The things that the F have so many symbols, have so many components. If it turns out to me, F, naively F, have the same symmetry as this kind of graph.
It's delta ijk. What is delta ijk? Like, the branching,
yeah, there's a branching rule. Delta ijk is a function which is specified branching rule. If ijk satisfies the branching rule, the delta equal to 1. If ijk do not satisfy branching rule, delta ijk equal to 0.
Branching what? You have a group?
No, it's a definition. It's this concept. Just some branching. We just specify some branching rule. So that really means that if ijk satisfy branching, then this f will be equal to this ratio. If it do not satisfy if ijk here do not satisfy branching, f must be 0.
It's connecting the wave function. Because ijk is 1 or 0.
Yeah, it's just 1 or 0.
But how is this determined?
Oh, just this is the input data. We just arbitrarily choose a set of branching rule. Then we solve this equation.
So these rules just take the form of sort of Kronecker deltas. So what, something's bothering me now. If you say these are, you want to identify I, J, and K as group representation, irreducible representation of some group.
Yeah.
So if you take, so basically you can take I and J and you take the tensor product.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, good. By K.
Yes.
Now the problem is that sometimes you get multiplicities.
Exactly. Then this one will be not equal to 1.
So it's an integer.
Why don't
you write
nijk? Yes. It is nijk. The reason I do delta is falling.
But where is that in the spin?
That's right. So that's confusing. To do that, you need to add another spin here.
You get this if you had actual group valued degrees of freedom on the link.
You need to add a spin on the side.
Yeah.
You need to add a spin to the side.
That's equal to nijk.
Yeah.
Takes values
later. Yeah.
Takes NIJK.
So the theory, so what I claim is not quite true. The
nonsense.
Yes. You're thinking it out. You need a, you know, this is simple version only describe a gauge, a group which for the branching rule is always a 1 or 0, you know. And what I try to say is I cross J cross 3 cross K, SU2, yeah.
Oh,
you only have a 1, yeah. So SU2 is 1. But for other more complicated group, if you have multiple 1, and then we need to add a additional degree of freedom at the branching point.
So that takes NIJK different values.
Yeah. Yes. And then that whole thing became even more complicated than this. The F will become matrix. So the panic identity, which describes everything, actually is a formula for the matrix, of a matrix with a 6 index. So here I'm just describing a simplified version, so the F became a number.
Do these subsidiary conditions have analogs in control field theory too, or are these additional beyond what goes on in control field theory?
And there's those more cyber ones too? On the cyber, they certainly have this, you know, this I don't know whether this additional, how this, We don't know how this additional, this is just a tetrahedral symmetry, I think it's there.
Okay, so there.
But this one, this one should also be generalized, but I don't know how to generalize. Okay. I haven't really think about that. Yeah.
Okay. And the last condition, is it some kind of connectivity?
No, not this, I mean this one. This one is this F, I, J, K, L, M, N, when you divide by D, I, D, J, D, L, D, N. This ratio have a symmetry, of this tetrahedral. So the last condition is really, you can rotate this, then this index changes and they're equal. And this is very important because that's reduced a lot of independent component here. So this ratio have a tetrahedral symmetry. Yeah.
So, I mean, thinking as a physicist.
Yeah.
What do you intend to use this to try to do?
Yeah, Hamiltonian next thing.
Well, no, but sorry, the ultimate goal is to construct simple Hamiltonians which have topological orbital states.
Yes. Yeah.
Hamiltonian is just the projector onto the
state. Exactly. Yeah.
But ultimately,
you could also have gone on to say that you presumably have excitations which are classified by representations or something, hopefully.
Yeah.
Labeled by this.
Yeah.
Probably obey same fusion rules.
Yes. Exactly.
The things you started with.
Exactly.
Something that looks realistic.
Yeah.
So there should really be a lot more information here than just a ground line.
No. When you have a Hamiltonian, there's a lot of more information. What I try to say is that the number of string is from 1 to n. The number of quasi particle type typically is n squared. The reason is that this number string just represent electric field. So 1 to n really have just different electric charge. But however, once you have a string condensed state, or for any condensed state, you can modify the phase wave function, which give you a vortex. So in a string condensed wave function, yeah, there's also vortex, and there's an operator which create a vortex. And so number of vortex also n, so combination roughly n squared. That's for abelian, it's always n squared. For non-abelian, then things become complicated. And as a physics is really that once you get this data F, you're able to construct a fixed point Hamiltonian, which really realize this particular string condensed states.
So given some, you look for the Fs and you find the solution,
yeah.
And that allows you then to construct
explicit Hamiltonian involving 12 spins.
Wave function,
not that explicit. Really, we don't know how to write them down because we only know local rules and it's determined, but it's hard to write down a formula for that.
But presumably, you could start with.
Could you simulate on a computer?
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
simple.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. You can spell. It's determined.
Next week, I'm going to give some examples where you can write out the answer.
Yeah.
Can you show that different solutions are orthogonal states?
You can, what do you mean a different solution of F?
Yeah,
Different F really give you different Hamiltonian.
Yeah.
And they usually describe different order. That's right. And usually, I think they are found at least in the infinite, in the thermodynamic limit.
Slightly different
than
the thermodynamic. How different
are
different?
Yeah.
Well, they probably have different numbers of quasi
particles. How many different Fs can you find? Let's say you just limit n to 1.
Okay, well, n equal to 1, we find us 3.
3 different apps.
Yes. With a different branching rule. So, I think we know 3, but I don't know whether there's only 3 or not. And the point is that because this branching rule is input in the formula, if you arbitrarily choose a branching rule, sometimes this equation don't have a non-zero solution. And for certain choice of branching rule, this equation have a non-zero solution.
Yeah.
And so one set of branching rule is this one. This just means no branch, just loops. Yeah. And so then this one have a solution. But surprisingly, I have a two solution. Usually this is like a Z2 theory. You know, one string, just like Z2 gate theory. You know, so of course, should have Z2. Z2 is there. But it have another solution. Another solution is correspond to this F111100 equal to minus 1. Yeah. So this is really the Friedman talk about. Because this is a loop. So this really within the Friedman theory. Because this is purely loop. And so this is kind of D. This is what Friedman talked about, D homotopy or something like that. Yeah. And then these two, the specific example of this Hamiltonian is really obtained from the solution. You know, we get a F. Then from F, there's explicit expression of the matrix element of this matrix acton 12 spin. So you have this with a big index, then with a product of 6F. 1, 2, 3, 4, 6. So this is 6F together can construct this matrix element which act on this 12 spin here. And so then you can show that all this operator commute because F satisfy these three relations. But this sounds hard, but actually it's pretty simple because this F have a graphic representation. I just say this. Because this operator B, actually what they do is that it just add a loop graphically. Then you can using these local rules to deform this into this one. Then again, using some F rule to make this into this one. And then this line with a bubble is just like that. So this way you can obtain the matrix element of this. That's how they get it. And the commutation is very simple because when you have a two hexagon, you know, one operator add a loop here, another operator add a loop here. There's no intersection, so they commute. So it's a pretty simple. Once you have this structure, it's pretty simple to construct. Just calculating the matrix element it takes some time. But the proof of the commutation using graphical rule just that. It's really building into the self consistency of the Pentagon of this branching, this recoupling, you know. So that's how this was done. And so another example solution is that it's a 0, 0, 0, 1, 1, 0, and 1, 1, 1. This one is this happened to be also a branching rule which have a non-trivial solution. And this one also included in the Friedman's theory, but they construct this using loops only. So this is quite amazing. So this really means this branching is allowed. Yeah.
What theory is this?
This is supposed to be the SU2 level 3 chance doubled SU2 level 3 Chen-Simon theory with all the sector removed. So what I'm trying to say is that we do have difficulties. You know, it's easy for first to find a solution, write a Hamiltonian, then calculate the properties. Statistics, you know, from F you can construct also the string operator which create quasi-particles. And from F you can calculate the statistics of the quasi-particle and all that. But the trouble is always people always ask, what is this theory? You know, the theory just like what is this theory? That's we are there's a difficulty. We don't know what it is. You know,
make a name after it.
Yeah, exactly. Just make a name. Because this one happened to be we know.
Construct a 12 spin.
Yes.
Term that gives you that.
Exactly.
Same one.
Yeah, the 12 spin. But unfortunately, I couldn't write in this form. This is still simple, so I can really write them down in terms of polymatrix. That one is, one can write down, just it's very long. But still 12 spin interaction give this one. So this is
you can write you can sum these three projection operators and have continuous.
And yeah, this one is not there. We just said this is zero. So this is a this one is a delta. This is delta ijk, essentially. This is the projection. The branching rule is here. And so the F is here, and they commute.
And you take your Hamiltonian now and put it in parameters, you can go between all
exactly the all that. Yes.
And that exhausts the phase space, you think?
With only what Nick said, that is to really have a most general theory, one need a spin decrement on the site.
Even just with n equals one.
Oh, n equals one. Yes, you can go on. Yeah. The three theory are the spin 1/2 system on the Kagame lattice.
And there are three phases. There are
three phases, and they're described by different parameter of this Hamiltonian.
So how does it fit in? So what's your view of the phase diagram?
I don't know. Yeah. So that is yeah.
In this way of approaching it,
you're so practical.
You can prove that there are only three things.
I don't know. Yeah, I haven't really said. One can check, you know, whether inside the question is well defined. For n equal to one, how many solutions can construct? We find three, but we didn't do exhaustive search. We don't know whether it's only three or not, but likely probably only these three. You know, I write a program to do all this calculation. Usually, when I plug in a random branching rule, I just get no solution.
Yeah, but haven't the mathematicians proven things about for a given number in the conformal field theory language, a given number of primary fields, you know, different consistent.
Yeah, the formulation here is a little bit different. You can see.
No, I understand it's a little different, but it's only those sorts of results can be converted to this case to prove.
Because this n equal to one is just just means one electric charge.
Yeah.
In the conformal theory, when they say primary field, they include both electric charge and magnetic charge in the combination of them. So here the formulation is a little bit strange because this is really a construction point of view. So may not be most natural from a classification point of view. So here is like n equal to one really means what is a theory can write down with only one electric charge, but it could have several different magnetic charge, you know. And but this is really the construction, and it's just a particular construction. But from the classification in the mathematical community, when they classify this, the string actually not only electric string, the string there is involved both electric flux and the magnetic flux. So it's a more complicated string. So the algebra is more complicated.
So if I have like two of these different theories and a phase and a boundary between the two of them, you just do that. Something like
conformal field theories on the edges, or yes, the answer is yes or no. The reason is that whether you get this is all double the theory, so edge is not chiral. If there is edge, it's not chiral. So then the stability of the edge became tricky because non-chiral edge don't have to be stable.
Yeah.
But however, there are examples that the edge is stable, provided that you cut the edge in a particular fashion, which you have some symmetry along the edge. Then in that case, there are examples that's in that case, you do have a non-chiral edge states. Say the example is like some kind of some cousin of Z2 theory. The edge you have a two Majorana fermion, right more Majorana fermion, left more Majorana fermion, but non-chiral.
And but has a chiral symmetry or something to prevent a mass term for the fermion.
No, because the translation turns out to be this translate this on the edge. This that's why it happened to be on a square lattice. So on a square lattice, so the translation along this direction prevent the mass term. And the if you add some kind of dimer, like increase the spin coupling like this, then the mass term will be generated. So if you break translation, you'll generate a mass term. But if you do not break translation, then it is a massless.
So you have some kind of concrete modeling,
right? There's a concrete model. Okay, the concrete model for that one is a. It's really the model constructed by Kitaev, which is a sum over p. This is just a one way to write this. Times. So this Hamiltonian is sum over all plaquettes. And this particular Hamiltonian is correspond to the Z2 gauge theory. And have the problem I just described on the on the 1-0 edge or 0-1 edge, you have a gapless Majorana fermion mode. For this particular model, actually they do not propagate, but you can add some other term to make them propagate. But on the 1-1 edge, there's no such mode. Yeah. So there's a lot much richer here. So what I'm missing is this really the problem of this PSG. That is, you can see the quasi particle in this system are really created by open strings. So for example, the quasi particle corresponds to one end of a string. And then there's an issue about what is a Hamiltonian for this one end of a string. This Hamiltonian should be particle Hamiltonian, should be some kind of hopping Hamiltonian. Then the natural issue would be like, what is the symmetry of this hopping Hamiltonian for effective Hamiltonian for this one end? Then certainly you say, well, the hopping Hamiltonian should have the same symmetry as underlying model. But the answer is no, because the string never appear as one. One end never appear alone. They always appear in pairs. So therefore, the underlying symmetry only require the direct product. Only require the two particle system have a symmetry. And so the symmetry of a hopping Hamiltonian for one particle is like a square root of the underlying symmetry. And the square root you allow to add some twist, some phase there. And this, so therefore, the symmetry of a hopping Hamiltonian is not symmetry, but it's a projected symmetry group. And you can see so far I didn't talk anything about the symmetry, but symmetry plays a very important role here. But if you have a symmetry, and then the how symmetry enter, one way for symmetry enter the system is this.
What is this? Sorry, this is the charged particle, is it?
Or any other thing. Any of magnetic, you know, anything, because they are string. Those particles are created by string, any string. And they have this. And this is important because this group are bigger than the symmetry group. So therefore, the hopping Hamiltonian for the end string have this bigger symmetry. And then that's how the PSC protect the massless excitation, because of the mass term. Sometimes if you only look at a symmetry, the mass term is allowed by symmetry. But if you look more carefully, the mass term is not allowed by PSG. So there's a lot of example that the massless fermion, the end string is protected because it is a bigger symmetry. And also there's a lot of example. There's a recent example like this. You have this phase transition between two different phase with a different symmetry. And this PSC also play an important role there, because to have a continuous phase transition, that means you only have one relevant operator. If you have two relevant operators, three relevant operators, you don't have a continuous transition. But sometimes when you study PSC, you know, if you don't know the PSC, it looks like this transition have two relevant operator, but somehow one of them are forbidden to have PSC. So you get continuous transition at the place which you don't expect them. If you only consider symmetry, it looks like two are allowed, but in the PSC only one allowed.
Objective group is a property of the fixed point.
Yes.
It is
a property of the Hamiltonian. Also fixed point, yes.
Well, it's a trivial.
Yes, yeah. It's encode the correlation inside the wave function. Yeah, it encode something there. The Hamiltonian only knows symmetry, but there's a P really. There's some feature of a condensation kind of lifted, subtract into this.
If you know the low energy Hamiltonian for all the particles,
yeah.
Do you know F? Can you deduce an F?
Well, what do you
probably.
Do you whose
no, I don't want. You know, imagine you're trying to identify some
microscopic
model with one of his phases that he's classified.
Yeah.
You have to think of at least thought measurements that you can carry out, since you don't have your hands on his string variables. So
yeah.
Maybe you can look at the particle content.
Yeah. So this is a really a very important question. That is about detection and measurement. You know, F is not something you can measure. So the issue is that what set of physical quantity, which is complete so that you can describe, determine everything, I don't know.
Parameter?
No other parameter.
Well, how much
the observables,
exactly
yeah. And there are two quantity which is apparently very important, at least from the conformal field theory. It's a correlation function for this kind of loop.
Be able to measure the fusion
rule for the fringe
particles.
The fusion rule quantum particle. You mean that's N I J K?
Well, yeah.
We should really stop. Yeah, I kind of.
There's another talk in two.
Yeah. I don't know. It doesn't matter. I think it's track on that. Yeah. Yeah.
What's the rest of your